Welcome to the Irish Pagan School podcast. Your hosts are authors and co-founders of the Irish Pagan School here in County Waterford, Ireland, Laura O'Brien and John O'Sullivan. Fáilte.
Dáigh díobh agus fáilte. Hi, hello and welcome. It's John O'Sullivan from the Irish Pagan School and we're here with this week's check-in chat and coffee talk. So with beverage sipped and on board, today I wanted to talk about a sad and hard truth concerning Irish paganism. But before we dive into that, I'd like to also invite you to come along and pick up some free resources about Irish paganism. All you got to do is go to irishpagan.school/free. It's a big part of what we do here at the Irish Pagan School, which provide as much access to available like resources as we can to get people started. And you know, yes, there is deeper learning. There's more stuff to get done. And, like, you know, we support native teachers as well by having paid classes at our school. But we also try and make sure that there's a lot. I think there's like 2 years worth of personal learning someone could undertake just in the resources that is on that irishpagan.school/free. So speaking about Irish paganism, a sad and hard truth. It is something that we come up against time and again when we deal with this misinformation that's going on. And yeah, it's one of the like sadder, more pervasive kind of mindsets that, you know, we have to really overcome when we target this misinformation about Irish paganism. And to really understand that, we have to go back to the beginning. Now, by the beginning, I'm going to talk about the archaeological record of people living in Ireland. And that's what we mean by beginning. So at the moment, the current kind of glaciation model for like northern Western Europe has Ireland completely covered by ice between 30,000 years ago and 14,000 years ago. And that's when the ice age began to end and the ice began to melt, revealing the island. But scientific discoveries have added question marks to all of those dates. Two amazing kind of women. I have their names here in front of me because I want to actually make sure I'm naming them. It's Ruth Carden and it is Marion Dowd. Yeah, there we go. Dr. Marion Dowd. And these two archaeologists were studying previous finds of bones, fossil bones and such that were excavated from caves. The first was from 1902, a cave in County Clare, and there was a bear bone that they were assessing again, and they found that it had butcher marks on the bear bone. And when they carbon dated it, it came out that it was 14,000 years old, which pushed back the occupation of Ireland of like people, you know, harvesting and kind of using tools in Ireland by 2,500 years at that point. Since then, Ruth Craden, carrying on the work, has found a reindeer bone from County Cork, which again, radiocarbon dated it, pushes it back to 30,000 years ago. So we have this, we have proof of like people living, hunting and, you know, butchering animals, you know, using tools. And again, flint tools, sure, but we have early humanoid tool using occupation in the island 32,000 years ago, I think it is. And so that pushes the date back more than 20,000 years for the current model that we understand things are. So it's proof that Ireland existed, a proof that the island, you know, had life on it. It's proof that people were here living and pursuing their lives and engaging in tool use. So it was, it's not early hominids. We're not dealing with like, we're dealing with like the first kind of maybe Homo sapiens, maybe Homo Neanderthals. The first tool use was actually with Homo erectus, which I studied when I was in school. So the early kind of hominids, we have proof of their existence on the island of Ireland. Now, we then go from there to the mythology and the stories that we have written down about the various tribes that came into Ireland. The timeframes of the tribes, we can kind of map about based on what they're doing. So a lot of the early stories of the tribes coming into Ireland talk about it being a primeval forest, a primordial forest. And they talk about, like, you know, the great deeds that were done in clearing vast swathes of forest to make room for plains, to make room for agriculture, you know, or, you know, digging out kind of lakes and rivers in order to kind of provide irrigation on the landscape. And that is some of the older stories. That is actually pre-Tuatha Dé and pre-Milesians. There's actually talk of the Partholonians, which are pre-Numidians, doing that on the island. So the very oldest stories we have about occupation on the island talk about, you know, cultivating the land, you know. And if we map that against our current understanding of peoples, and like, you know, it was Homo sapiens who actually began in the early Neolithic period, the Stone Age period, to begin having early agriculture, early farming, moving from a hunter-gatherer society to the agricultural form that we know. Of course, this then leads to a growth in different societies, and we have 3,000 years BC before Common Era, we have the building of the Passage Tomb in Newgrange. Now, all of this is, you know, history and archaeology. So why is this relevant to our sad and hard truth? Well, it proves that there were people here a long, long time ago. When we talk about the Republic of Ireland isn't even 100 years old yet. We had our centenary or 100-year celebration for the 1916 Rising, but the Republic wasn't actually fully ratified until the 1930s. So we're coming up on that. But it shows that we had our country, we had Ireland, and we had people living here doing things a long, long time ago. So, of course, the mythological time frame, some of the later mythological stories, when we move into the Ulster cycle, are mapped against the biblical stories because they were written down by the hands of the people of the new faith or Christians in Ireland. But even though they were documenting their own kind of monasteries and everything else, there was still these older stories written in these manuscripts, like the Great Book of Lecan, the Yellow Book of Lecan, the Book of Fermoy, Lara na Hoodra, the Book of Leinster, Book of the Dun Cow. These are all manuscripts that come from the medieval period. And though some of the manuscripts themselves are carbon dated to between the 11th and 14th centuries, the language, the script written in it, we can actually date older than that to the 8th and 9th centuries, linguistically speaking. And we know that there was kind of copying and recopying done of these manuscripts in monasteries to preserve them over time. So the stories are old, you know, and that's, again, we go from 3,000 years before Common Era with the building of Newgrange, and then we've moved up to 800 to 900, linguistically speaking, in the medieval period, writing down these stories. But before that, in the 600 to 700s, is when we actually have the first kind of arrivals of Christianity into Ireland. And we have this, a pope kind of puts a bishop in charge, a guy called Palladius, who's then set to kind of bring Christianity to like the people of Ireland, or the Scotty people, who are said to be here as well. Yeah, this is a whistle stop to our true history. So I'm not going to take it down many rabbit holes. I'm probably going to cause many questions. And if you find something here that you want to know more on, ask the question in the comments. I'd be happy to kind of go deeper with it. But essentially, we then have Palladius coming in. He has no success whatsoever, which sets the stage for Patrick and the propaganda piece that is St. Patrick bringing Christianity into the heathens of pagan Ireland. But it was still the rise of that was happening between the 7th to the 9th century Common Era. But we still had pagan Ireland. We still had Gaelic Ireland. And that's when things began to get further problematic with the arrival of the Normans. 1169 is the Norman invasion brought in by Irish kings. A guy called Richard de Clare or Strongbow is brought over to support the failing power of one particular king. But that guy pretty much set the stage for a full-on Norman invasion, which then leads to when the Normans kind of lost power. The Normans were a dominant force in the island of Britain, but then when they lost power to the Saxons and the Anglo-Saxons, that led to the power kind of flowing over into Ireland as well, which of course sets the whole stage for the ongoing occupation of our country. We get to the 1600s when we have a thing called a part in history known as the Flight of the Earls. Because of the continued pressure, because of the intentional eradication of Irish culture by very harsh laws, by very harsh kind of taxations and all the rest of it. There was even taxations put on linen, because a sign of Irish cultural wealth was how much linen you had in your clothing. You know, if you go to any of the museums, you'll see that there's lads with these big, mad, kind of like almost like cheese wheel size hats. That was a display of like cultural wealth, because they had enough linen to make that very wide brimmed hat. Or they would have extra layers of really long sleeves in their garments, again, showing that they had a cultural wealth. And so, yeah, taxation was actually levied on linen in order to undermine that display of Irish cultural or Gaelic cultural wealth. And it seems like we're just targeting for it was specific. It was specifically targeted. And we have the shift and changes in the laws. It became illegal to have a bard hosted in a noble Irish household. They can actually get censure. And why would you make bards illegal if not to prevent the stories of the culture being told? And so that all leads to the flight of the Earls in the 1600s, which is the vast, it's said to be the end of Gaelic Ireland, with the removal of the last of the Irish nobility. Now, you might think that that's where things get bad, or that's the worst of it, but it gets worse from there, because then we move into the cycles of the kings of England and their plantations, the many plantations that were done on Ireland to dispossess Irish people of their lands and their holdings, and to move those loyal to the British crown onto our lands and to completely destabilize everything. It got down to the point that 98% of the island was owned by 1% of the population, and that population were those who were loyal to the crown of England. And it was a systematic, intentional deconstructing of any kind of culture, any kind of like everything. And that's where all the propaganda comes in about the savage Irish, you know, and the dangerous kind of idiots and all the rest of that, which then sets the stage, these plantations, for the Gorta Mór, the Great Hunger, which, you know, of course, lists as a famine. It was a potato blight that came in, but it wasn't about the potato blight. It was about the power structures in England in the 1840s to 1850s. Because there was vast amounts of crops grown here in Ireland, but all of which was being exported to feed, or the pockets and purses. It wasn't even to feed people. It was actually for the profits of the landlords, the English landlords over in Britain. So people starved. People absolutely starved and died. People ate grass in order to survive. And those who could gather enough funds to send family out of Ireland to other countries did the best they could. And that's where we get the stories of the coffin ships in the 1850s and onwards, where we have vast amount of emigration. And the population of Irish people went from, I think it was somewhere in the region of 14 million to less than one. So that's the 1850s. But before like that, like mass exodus of people into like places like the Americas, places like the Caribbean, places like Australia, Irish culture had already been under siege for 200 years or more. You know, it's rough and harsh stuff. We then have the struggle for independence that comes around in the 1900s, the 1916 Rising, as I mentioned, which comes off the back of a lot of development from things like the Gaelic League, which was people trying to explore the ancient stories, people going back to the manuscripts, these old kind of manuscripts, and pulling out those old stories and questioning them and looking at them and retelling them. As much as there's problems in Lady Gregory's work, it's a romanticized version of the stories, absolutely, but it still set the stage for the awareness that there was Irish culture before the English eradication, before this, oh, they're just dumb savages and paddies and mix and whatever else. Like, the expression of our art, the expression of our culture, the expression of our stories and the detailed elements of it and everything else that was woven within those stories, the education that came with those stories, really kind of solidifies why the bards were made illegal. Because if you know the stories of your powerful ancestors, if you know the stories of your culture, if you have stories of your own kind of heroes, that inspires a people to be who they are and not be what other cultures tell them that they are. So Ireland was time and again targeted, you know, from the 600s, 700s by Christian kind of occupation. And, oh, we need to kind of deal with this spirituality circumstance and a propaganda piece that's Patrick, right the way through to the power structures and the political invasions and colonizations that happened from the Normans to the Anglo-Saxons through to the English dominance and the plantations. So the sad and hard truth is that there is no unbroken line of Irish paganism. None. The Druids were eradicated. The bards were undermined and eradicated. Everything was systematically targeted to destroy Irish culture, Irish cultural identity, Irish kind of knowledge and information, to push it aside so that a people, an entire nation of people, could be dominated. And that happened successfully. And it's sad, and it's hard, and it's true. Because we can show from the history. I've listed you off the dates and the facts. I can provide you with the resources. I'll put a link to a blog post I wrote on this, which provides more information to resources. It's a sad and hard truth. And so anyone who presents themselves as, you know, descendant of the royal bloodline, holding the ancient truths of Ireland, you know, anyone who claims to have been exported with the traditional heritages handed down through their ancestors is full of shit. I'm sorry. Or if they aren't full of shit, I have never met one who I can't systematically prove is full of shit very quickly. Because pagan Ireland was disappearing from the 9th century. And the life expectancy of people, even if we don't want to take it to the 9th century, if we take it to the 1850s, with the Court of More, the life expectancy of people in Ireland was down to like 20 or 30 years old. So we go from the 1600s with the Flight of the Earls to the 1850s, life expectancy somewhere between 20 and 30. That's still 200-year gap. That's between, let's say, conservatively, 8 generations of people. Even if people did live to, like, you know, 40 or 50, you know, they got to be old. It's still 4 generations of people covered in 200 years. So, yeah, that's a sad and hard truth. There is no unbroken line. There is no secret druid lineage that exists. There is no royal special blood thing or DNA thing. Frustrating as that might be, though, it's not all sad news, okay? It's not all sad, bad, gloom news. Because, as I said, the Gaelic revival showed us that there was information we could go back to. There was old stories that we can kind of dig out. We can go back to these manuscripts. We can try and translate them. We can try and piece them out to get an understanding of what our pre-Christian Ireland was like, our pre-colonized Ireland was like. And it was beautiful. It was amazing. It was abundant. It was also just. The Brehon Laws is one of the most extensive law systems that existed, with everything from, like, you know, your rights in your societies based on your class, based on your lineage, everything down to, you know, the honor price that would be paid if harm was damage was done to property, people, or anything like that at all. And even down to different types of marriages. There was a whole range of different types of marriages, everything from, you know, a year and a day marriage all the way up to marriages of equals at, like, higher power structures, which were recognized and supported within the legal structures, all of which as well, it wasn't punitive justice, it focused on restorative justice. So if someone actually, like, caused damage to someone else's property, they had to work off that damage. They had to kind of make sure it wasn't like they get their hand cut off and they're put away, or they're, like, put in prison, or they're killed. They had to actually make do. They had to either, like, cover with a price. They had to pay off a bounty, or not a really a bounty. Like, they had to pay off milch cows, cattle, really, to pay off a lot of it. But there was prices to be paid to restore for the loss. So that area of our culture was absolutely fascinating and amazing. All of which existed before, like, maritime law, which is the current kind of law that predominantly kind of sits around the world. So there is a lot that we can go back to. There's a lot that we can pull out and we can explore. But what has happened in the intervening years is that other kind of cultural influences come in, and as people try and rebuild or kind of find, like native spirituality, what has unfortunately happened is that stuff has been imported. Stuff has been brought into the island, and, you know, you end up with then prayers from different cultures, but with just Irish gods or goddesses, like, shoved on top of them, or practices from other cultures, like, cobbled in or mishmashed in to have some kind of spiritual practice that is non-Christian on the island. And in some cases, it's good enough. It's good enough for some form of personal spiritual practice. But for us here at the Irish Pagan School, we look at Ireland, we look at the beauty of our country, we look at the beauty and amazing, like, culture that existed here before all of the occupations, before all the colonizations, and we believe that good enough isn't good enough. We don't want to take an easy road. We don't want to kind of just find something to make it work. We want to dig. We want to go deeper. We want to kind of go back to these old stories and find the old roots of everything, to kind of excavate these kind of heritage seeds that come from these practices, these old kind of practices. And it exists within the landscape itself. Like, you can go to Newgrange. Like, there's dolmens all over this country. Like, the landscape of Ireland itself, and coupled with the stories of Ireland, tell us an experience of spirituality existing on this land. So it's hard work. It takes a heck of a lot of effort to do that. And that's why when we teach at the Irish Pagan School, like, we're not giving you a quick fix. We're not giving you, here's the secret truth. Here's the thing hidden by, here's the magic kind of answer. What we're setting you up for is work. We're giving you the tools and the resources to go deep with this exploration for yourself, to kind of explore how you can find your own path to spirituality within the correct and information, as correct and real information as we can find, presented as much without bias as possible, or where our own bias or our own kind of practices come into it. We're very clear about saying, hi, here's what's literally written in the texts. Here's the translations of it. Here's the problems with the translations. And then here's my personal application of it as a pagan living in Ireland today. At which point, you know, it's presented to anyone who wants to take a class, anyone who wants to follow the teaching, anyone who wants to read the blogs or the resources. They then have the opportunity to process it for themselves and see what kind of synthesis works for them or what practices they can take up to follow from there. So the sad and hard truth, as I mentioned at the top end, is there is no unbroken line of Irish pagan spirituality or DNA or special kind of club membership or secret hidden knowledge. What there is, though, is a pathway to decolonize our spirituality, to dig out all of the stuff that, you know, is good enough, but we think Ireland and Irish people into the future deserve better. So there's a path to kind of do that. There's a way to delve and to explore, to take the archaeology into our practice of spirituality and to try and find it out. So I invite you to come along with us and do the work. If you're interested in more resources on this, if something on this has tickled you, inspired you, or you want to know more, irishpagan.school/free. And as ever, thank you for being here with us. Gurav Míle Maith Agat, look after yourself. And until next time, slán. Goodbye.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a positive review in your podcast listener. Then head over to irishpaganschool.com and enroll in one of our free or paid courses. Slán go fóill, and we will see you next time.